little Bobby McFerrin for the morning. How nice. For our second reading this morning, I've chosen some of Judith Sargent Murray's own words. These are excerpted in Polly Peterson's book that features a chapter on Judith. These are words that were written and published in March and April of 1790 in Boston from Judith Sargent Murray's essay on the equality of the sexes. Yet it may be questioned from what doth this superiority and its determining faculty of the soul proceed. May we not trace its source to the difference of education and continued advantages? Will it be said that the judgment of a male 2-year-old is more sage than that of a female's of the same age? I believe the reverse is generally observed to be true. But from that period, what partiality? How is the one exalted and the other depressed? By the contrary modes of education which are adopted, one is taught to aspire and the other is early confined and limited. As their years increase, the sister must be wholly domesticated while the brother is led by the hand through all the flowery paths of science. I've always considered myself a feminist ever since my mother explained the Equal Rights Amendment to me as a 10-year-old. She was tepidly in favor of it. Let's pause for just a moment. Do we have a doctor here this morning? Okay, great, super. Let's just all remain calm, please. If anyone else is feeling the slightest bit warm, please take off a layer, loosen a tie. Eric, would you mind playing something on the organ for us, please? Thank you all for remaining calm. If I can have the ushers close the back lobby doors, we'll continue with the service. We might hear an ambulance come. If it does, we will just take it in stride. The very best thing we can do for one another is to be kind and to be compassionate in a moment like this, and we will keep Tim and Becky in our thoughts and prayers as they take Tim to the hospital, and we will pray that all will be well. And after a couple of breaths, I'll start the sermon again, if you'll all permit me. Thank you, Eric. All right, everybody, nice deep breath in and out. Two more, one in, and a third one. I've always considered myself a feminist, ever since my mother explained the Equal Rights Amendment to me as a 10-year-old. She was tepidly in favor of it. I thought it was the most natural thing in the world and wondered why it had taken so long. The Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA, was a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution designed to guarantee equal rights for women. The ERA had always been highly controversial regarding the meaning of equality for women. It was feminist against feminist, said historian Judith C. Lander. The result was the eventual defeat of the ERA. Middle-class women were generally supportive of it. Those speaking for the working class were strongly opposed, arguing that employed women needed special protections regarding working conditions and hours. In 1972, it passed both houses of Congress and was submitted to the state legislatures for ratification. It seemed headed for quick approval until Phyllis Schlafly mobilized conservative women in opposition, arguing that the ERA would disadvantage housewives. Congress had set a ratification deadline of March 22, 1979. Through 1977, the amendment received 35 of the necessary 38 state ratifications. Five states later rescinded their ratifications before the 1979 deadline. In 1978, a joint resolution of Congress extended the ratification deadline to June 30, 1982, but no further states ratified the amendment, and it died. What a lost opportunity. What a slap down to half the population of our country, a slap down that continues to see women making significantly less than men for comparable jobs. A slapdown that sees women still needing to fight for their own reproductive rights. A slapdown that has resulted in a long list of first woman this and first woman that. First woman senator, first woman astronaut, first woman attorney general, first woman West Point cadet, first woman secretary of state, and so on. This year we might even get a chance to add first woman president to the list. The problem, of course, is not that women are in leadership where they should have been all along. The problem is that such lists exist at all. Women are equal to men in all respects. Our society is just a bit slow in realizing it. And every enlightened idea has to start somewhere. When Judith Sargent Murray's essay on the equality of the sexes was published in Boston in 1790, many people read it, but very few paid it any attention. Nor did they pay much attention to Murray's British counterpart, Mary Wollstonecraft, and her feminist manifesto, A Vindication of the Rights of Woman. Such writings by women were unusual and unwelcome in colonial America and imperial Britain. That each stands today as markers of the beginning of a feminist consciousness in both countries is significant. In their own time, they were soundly dismissed by men and women alike. In the late 18th century, it was uncommon for women to even be educated well enough to read and write. In her poems and essays, Judith Sargent Murray argued that women should have the same educational opportunities as men and that marriage should not be their only viable career option. The systemic way in which women were denied opportunities, she believed, was irrational, unjust, and harmful to our society. Though her ideas were radical for the time, we can easily hear a modern-day plea for greater opportunities for women and girls simply by turning on our television sets. In the 226 years since the publication of On the Equality of the Sexes, we have made good but incomplete progress. The basis for Judith Sargent Murray's feminism was her universalist faith. Because we are Unitarian Universalists, we too can take our faith as the starting place for our advocacy for women and girls. Murray's radical notions about God flew in the face of the Calvinist church in which she was raised. Rather than seeing all humans as depraved and in need of redemption, Murray believed, as all early Universalists did, that God was a loving God. And a loving God would not condemn any part of creation to eternal punishment. But Judith Sargent Murray took her theology even further. She was one of the earliest Western thinkers to not assume God was male. This was really radical for the time. And in this regard, she had good biblical grounding. In the first of two contradictory creation stories, and there are two and they contradict each other. In the first of two contradictory creation stories recorded in Genesis, the storyteller puts it this way. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness." Murray and others took the use of this word "our" to mean that God was neither male nor female. God might be neither or both, singular or plural. And while it might seem like a very small point to us, this small opening was enough for early women writers to see themselves as also created in the image of God. It was enough for them to relate to God and to religion in a more expansive manner. From this seed comes our modern-day appreciation for the feminine divine and for the fullness of gender expression. From it comes our ability to lay aside a gender binary that does not make room for transgendered people, for surely they are created in the image of God as well. But Murray does not stop here. Essayist Sarah Scobel writes, "Not satisfied with her attack on the male hegemony over women's education in her essay on the equality of the sexes, Murray appends a letter to the end of the essay that contains her startling reinterpretation of the biblical Adam and Eve story. In a very unusual statement for her time, but not for her controversial universalist faith and brethren, the author announces her belief that biblical stories are merely metaphorical." This is 1790, people. "With this one fell stroke, Murray invalidates the literal biblical evidence used by men to protest the education of women, a purpose for which scriptural stories were often, and even now often, are used." She then goes on in an interesting argument to exonerate Eve from the fall of man and place the ultimate blame for the original sin on Adam. According to Murray, an angel promising knowledge, not a snake, tempted Eve in the Garden of Eden. Eve accepted the angel's offer out of a desire for her own betterment through an all-encompassing wisdom. I think I like that ending better. The universalism of Judith Sargent Murray's day was still squarely Christian, as it would remain well into the 20th century. But this universalism also held the potential that would be realized in future generations, potential that we Unitarian Universalists still proclaim today. Within this universalism was the idea that all would be saved and none would be damned. Within this universalism was the idea that all should have worth and dignity in this life, here and now, not some future promise. Within it was the seed of religious appreciation that allows us to see Jews and Hindus, Buddhists and Muslims as our brothers and sisters. Within this universalism was the radical notion that love was and is the most powerful thing on earth, that with love, all might be saved, all might flourish, and all might know peace. We can be rightly proud to be modern-day universalists. The world is still very much in need of universalist messages. Who knows if Judith Sargent Murray could have envisioned what would become of her universalism and how it would change and grow and live on in the centuries after her death? Could she have imagined that Unitarian Universalism would be the first denomination in America to have more female ministers than male ones? Could she have imagined that Unitarian Universalism would open its doors to gay and lesbian ministers and then to bisexual and transgendered ones? Could she have imagined that Unitarian Universalism would develop and promote sexuality education curricula, first About Your Sexuality, AYS, and then Our Whole Lives, OWL, that would give girls and boys the information they need to navigate a sexually complex world? Could she have imagined lay women moderators of the UUA's General Assembly? Could she have pictured women in leadership in churches, large and small? I hope she might have been able to at least dream of one or two of these things. for we Unitarian Universalists have been true to the spirit of Judith Sargent Murray and to other early feminists. We have been faithful in our bringing their dreams to life. And this is yet another reason. It matters what you believe. It matters what I believe. It matters what we tell each other and what we tell others about this fine old faith of ours. Unitarian Universalism saves lives in Judith Sargent Murray's day and in our own as well. Never doubt that for 1 minute. But we must not be shy about inviting our friends to church. We must not keep this marvelous old religion to ourselves. Imagine how the world would be different, how Concord and its area would be different, if this church were full and spawning churches Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. When Reverend John Murray visited Gloucester, Massachusetts in 1774 and preached twice in the first parish church there, he could not have known that he was preaching to his future wife as well. As Amy told our children and us, John Murray's ministry only took hold on American soil because other people wanted to hear the message of universalism. Only because others urged him to did he preach his radical faith. But as she sat with her first husband and her two foster children in church, Judith Sargent was ready to hear John Murray's words those two Sundays in 1774. She was ready to help call John Murray to that pulpit a short time later when it came open, and then she was ready to advocate forming the first Universalist church in America when the majority of the first parish congregation could not support John Murray's candidacy for the pulpit. And 14 years after those first two sermons, a widowed Judith Sargent was ready to marry the evangelistic John Murray. Though her family objected to the marriage, claiming John Murray was socially beneath the Sargents, she married him anyway. As Polly Peterson writes in her essay about Judith Sargent Murray, John Murray encouraged and supported his wife's writing. She began publishing essays and poems under various pen names, both male and female. Her universalist beliefs had convinced her that men and women were essentially identical in all but body. The example of her own writings helped to prove it. When she wrote in a male guise, no one would guess that the disembodied voice was female, unless perhaps they noticed a persistent devotion to the theme of women's rights. Judith Sargent Murray was a woman ahead of her time. Universalism was her guiding light. May we be so bold as to go do likewise. So be it. Amen.